Hello, and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Seiger. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSeiger. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you guys immediately after the Suns Jazz game, but we're going to focus more on the immediate breaking news from today, which was the Suns made a trade finally. And confusingly enough, Brendan, it seems like the point guard position is still kind of in need. I don't really know how to describe it, because Tyler Johnson from the Miami Heat was traded to Phoenix today, along with Wayne Ellington, who, by the way, will get bought out. He'll never play for the Suns, for Ryan Anderson's contract. No picks either side, so it's just a straight two-for-one swap. For me, I was really instant reaction for me. I was just really confused by it, because one, Tyler Johnson doesn't fill the point guard need. I mean, he does a little bit. He's a combo guard, but the more I thought about it, though, I mean, you're thinking about Ryan Anderson, who's the 15th guy on the bench. Now you at least get a guy who is one of your five, six best players on the team, and he's really the same salary figure as Anderson was.
It definitely makes sense as far as you're swapping a player out for a player who you weren't going to use, who you haven't been using, really played much since the first couple weeks of the season, in Ryan Anderson, for someone making a similar amount of money that you will play. I mean, I feel like maybe I was like super hesitant at first, because we saw what happened with Austin Rivers. I had talked myself into Austin Rivers being at least a decent bench guy for this team. And then by the time I did that, then it was, oh, he's actually not going to play for the Suns. This is all a joke. Never mind. And he went to the Rockets. So I think that's not going to happen here. I think we already would have heard that. I think Johnson's a guy they're at least going to keep for the moment, at least through the rest of this season. And, you know, then he'll officially kind of be an expiring salary on a $19.2 million deal, a little bit more next season than Ryan Anderson would have been after working his contract down in that August trade to $15.6 million. So they're taking on a little bit of money next year. And I think that's where it gets a little bit dicey for me, whether they want to stretch it or keep him. Whatever they end up doing, I imagine they'll at this point. It doesn't make a ton of sense once you start to think about that. The Suns added more money, but they didn't get anything back of real value to do so. You know, we just saw Reggie Bullock get Svi Mykhailiuk and a second round pick back for the Pistons. We've seen, you know, the Kyle Korver trade, probably not comparable, but a couple of picks went back to the Cavs in that trade. And so the Suns got Wayne Ellington in this deal. And you thought, okay, if they can flip him, then that's a little bit more value, makes it a little bit more worth the Suns' while to help the Heat out and take on Johnson, who's going to cost a little more. And then, nope, the reports here, just like with Austin Rivers, are that the Suns are expected to buy Wayne Ellington out. So the value just doesn't quite add up to me. I really like Johnson. I really think he's an interesting player to try to see what he looks like next to Booker. Better on defense than you would imagine, and young, but I just think the Suns didn't get everything they could have from the Heat here.
I agree with you, and really for the Heat, from their side of things, they really got down near the tax as far as really saving themselves some money here with Wayne Ellington being included in the deal with Tyler Johnson's contract, who, by the way, will make $19.2 million next season for 2019-20, player option that he will definitely accept. So how do you go about this now? I mean, this is just interesting, because I don't think me or you expected them to get a contract like this, let alone one that's so big for next year. What do you think the Suns' plans are? Because it seems like I listened to the Arizona Sports John Gambadori today on the radio once this news was breaking. And from his sources, he said that pretty much the Suns are going to keep Johnson around for flexibility to pull off a trade either in the summer or next trade deadline. But when you think more about that, Brent, why don't they just keep Ryan Anderson then?
Exactly. Or in the first place, and you brought this up to me right before we started recording here. Obviously, the one factor when you start to go all the way back to that trade at the end of August, Brandon Knight for Ryan Anderson, that D'Anthony Melton deal, as it probably should be called. But part of that was getting Anderson to accept a smaller salary for 2019-20, as we've talked about plenty of times now. That was obviously Ryan McDonough who orchestrated that, with the intention clearly of stretching Anderson to pay him $5 million or so over three seasons and open up a little bit more cap space this summer. I think one thing this deal signals is the Suns aren't valuing that cap space this summer quite as much as they would have before, or they were for So that is something that I predicted. I wrote and we talked about last week, just the idea that James Jones seems a little bit more open to that idea. He hadn't been talking about going big fish hunting, big game hunting in free agency this summer, and even a hesitancy to go try to acquire a really great player in trade. Adrian Wojnarowski expected the Suns to be sellers, which I don't know how you kind of classify this deal. We'll probably see more tomorrow, but it felt like they might be willing to add more money. And that's part of we're back to the reason here why it's so puzzling, because when teams do that, already seen it here a little bit with the Kings, a little bit with the Cavs, taking on bad money in the future usually means you get something. The Suns did that with next season's uptick from 15.6 to 19.2. That's $3.6 million the Suns are going to be adding to their payroll next year, and they got nothing for it. And that's where I think they kind of failed here.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I'm thinking more about this while I'm, Brendan, and thinking more on this with the Sarver situation, James Jones, how the front office is going about this. If I'm not mistaken, I think Robert Sarver went 98.7 FM in October after he fired McDonough and said they were preserving max cap space. So now that's gone now, unless they get rid of Tyler Johnson. So like you said, it seems like they're kind of punting on the offseason now. So I'm kind of confused about what direction this team is going in for the offseason, because for 6 or 8 months now, we were really advertised by the front office that 2019 is the offseason where they're going to have a max cap space slot. They're going to try to recruit a name to join Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. But now, like you said, that's gone now unless they get rid of Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still ways to get to that space. And, you know, that's part of the problem here talking. If you assume, which I sort of do, that this is part of a larger series of moves, you know, tomorrow I would expect them to make at least one more deal now. I think it just makes sense to kind of figure out the rest of their plan. And then they obviously will have the draft as well. We've talked already about the potential of them to trade that pick. I think that is still in play. I think I still expect them to be pretty aggressive here the rest of the offseason. So maybe there'll be more tomorrow that kind of puts this into a little bit better perspective. I don't think this necessarily puts a halt on anything else that we've heard about from a point guard standpoint. I don't think Johnson's the answer there. I don't think they see him that way at all. And then as far as trading for a star, I mean, obviously that's the hope with a lot of the guys expiring and being bought out this summer for the Suns, or this season for the Suns, Tyson Chandler, Trevor Ariza, even Jared Dudley, who was traded but would have expired. The Suns are kind of low on those middle tier salaries that you can use to add up in a big superstar deal. I just think this team is pretty far away from that. So I'm not sure they really should be making moves now to prepare for their eventual trade for a star. That just seems like they have their eyes almost too far into the future. But how do you like the fit of Johnson? I think he'll at least be here the rest of this season and kind of help them stabilize the rotation a little bit, especially with DeAnthony Melton being injured. How do you like his fit? I mean, I don't think either you or I watched the Heat a whole ton, but just kind of looking it over here in the last few hours.
I mean, for me, I guess he is just a guy you can play on and off the ball a little bit. Like we mentioned how the podcast is a combo guard. He can play point in the pinch, but this really kind of makes me think they're going to see a lot more point Book once he's back. And I don't know how I feel about that, because it seems like the more point Book we see every time the usage goes up higher and there's a higher chance of him getting hurt. But I think Tyler Johnson's kind of a guy. DeAnthony Melton, he's not close to DeAnthony Melton as far as defense goes. He's a scrappy guy. But unlike Melton, I think he's a guy you can throw in the corner, who can at least initiate some offense, and he can hit some wide-open shots if need be, or create off the dribble. And I don't think Melton at least has that in his game right now. So I think Johnson could be a guy who just gets like 10, 12 points a night and like 3 or 4 assists. And that's all you really ask for him at this point.
Yeah, he's a career 37% three-point shooter. Past two seasons, he's been right around 36% for Miami, taking a pretty healthy dose of those shots, takes care of the ball. I mean, the 2016-17 season after he signed that deal was, or before he signed that deal, the one that led to that monster poison pill contract from Brooklyn was by far his best. 233 assists to just 90 turnovers that year. That's over 3-to-1 shot. 37% career high that season from three, played his most minutes. And that Heat team, I think that's the one that finished the season exactly 41-41, but went on that tear at the end of the year. So he's been a good team, a good player for a good team in his career. And the defensive impact is, like I said, more than you would expect. 1.7 steal percentage, 1.6 block percentage, pretty neutral defensive box plus minus, the Heat defense a little better when he's on the court. So I think that stuff makes you pretty optimistic overall. I think he's a solid player, but I don't think he figures too much into the future plans, but I definitely think he, along the line of someone, especially come off the bench and help this team. And it'll be another interesting test for Devin. I think they're kind of trying to probe the perimeter of what you can do with Booker. You know, it's kind of work. Can this player work? Can this player work? Melton, I think we've kind of seen that he needs to get better, but type of player. Okay. You kind of understand the fit there. Eliakobo, more of a scorer, more of like a spark plug, long, big scoring guard. Not as ideal. Now they're going to try something a little bit different with more of a balanced two-way guy, and we'll see how that goes. So I'm interested to see how it works.
Yeah, I am too. And before we go on, I wanted to hit on one more thing about the rotation here, because Tyler Johnson is going to be, I imagine, a starting point guard now with D'Anthony Melton still being injured, and he would start over Melton anyways, in my opinion. But Eliakobo, speaking more about the game tonight, he had another struggle, and he also did as well the other night against Houston. So Jamal Crawford, he only played 10 minutes tonight. He was 0 for 3, but that veteran presence, I think, is still vital to this young team. So Tyler Johnson's going to take away some minutes from some guys. I feel like once D'Anthony Melton gets back from his injury, I feel like maybe Eliakobo is the guy left out here in the rotation. What do you think?
Yeah, and we've seen that, right? We've already seen that this season a few times, especially if you think about the kind of, I don't know, I might put it at like a 25% chance that Jamal Crawford gets bought out. We haven't really heard it, but he's also not really playing a whole ton anymore. So maybe if that's what he and his agent want to do, then I think the Suns would satisfy that. He came here kind of seemingly to help the Suns out. It wouldn't surprise me the other way. So that would clear out some minutes. I think you could definitely see Melton, Okobo, Johnson, and Booker all play. So I wouldn't say it's too much of a problem, but if it starts to be Melton and Okobo are both healthy and they're, you know, not playing or playing very little, that would be concerning. But I guess cross that bridge when you come to it.
Yeah, for sure. And one more thing before we go on to recapping tonight's game. Any quick grades for this trade? I know the deadline's not till tomorrow, so there might be another move in between them, but just immediate reaction grade, just the Tyler Johnson Anderson swap.
I'd say the fit of Johnson, I would give like a B minus. I think it's a pretty interesting, solid idea. The trade itself, because of the Ellington factor, because they're going to buy out Ellington and they weren't able to get any other assets for, well, the other thing we should quickly mention here, and the reason my grade will be a little lower, the Heat got out of the luxury tax here on by doing this deal, basically entirely out of it just by getting rid of Johnson's $19 million and Ellington's $6 million and only taking back Anderson for next season. So that's a big favor that teams usually pay quite a bit to do, and the Suns got nothing. So I'm going to go with a C- for the deal as a whole.
We're actually right on a similar page, Brent. I actually have a C here, and thinking more about it, the on-court fit is still kind of confusing to me because this isn't a true point guard. So I'm kind of curious to see how Devin Booker reacts to this and how Johnson and Booker mesh off of one another for the last 20 or so games. But like you mentioned, the contract point of view, this is pretty much the Suns punting on the summer. I mean, they could still obviously be flexible for free agency and make that room if need be. But it seems like they're kind of maybe focusing a little too much on the long term here, it seems like, because if they really are imagining Tyler Johnson being the sweetener for a star in the next year or 6 months, and I think they're kind of overzealous there. But a straight C for me is pretty fair. But before we go on here to our next segment, you're talking about the game, we're going to just hit on our main positive negatives from tonight's game. I want to tell you guys really quickly about the Locked On NBA Network. By the way, we're hosting a Locked On NBA live show for our trade deadline tomorrow. So if you're not already doing that, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. You guys will be able to follow along with all the live coverage. The trade deadline, as you guys know, we've already seen 20 trades in the past like 48 hours. So it's been really crazy what's going on. It's going to be even crazier tomorrow. So follow along with all of us here on the Locked On Network. I know you guys enjoy us here in Phoenix with Brandon and I, but there's so many other great Locked On voices around the network, and you guys definitely need to follow along with them. So get it synced up with all 30 NBA teams in one area at Locked On NBA Net.
I want to also tell you guys about a fantastic opportunity to save a whole ton of money. That is with Homie. You've heard us talk about them quite a bit here for the past few weeks now. I'm sure you've seen their billboards going up all around Phoenix, and what they're doing is really exciting. They're offering a mobile app, an interface that is super easy to use, a team of realtors and agents to support you every step along the way without the hassle of hiring and paying a traditional real estate agent. It's a whole team of people to save you a ton of money with the same support you would get just about any other way. The best part here is as well that it's not like a lot of other services that are trying to buy the house directly from you and make some money doing it. Homey is here as a support system and to cut the fees down. They don't buy the houses, they just help you do that. So it's about the support, but mostly about saving a whole ton of money. So you can list your house here at Homey for just $199 and pay just $1,299 at close. You can also qualify for a $5,000 buyer refund. And that means that on average, Homey customers save over $10,000. Now we're changing it up here. I know you've heard me talk about the phone number, promo code, something different here. Once again, to get an even better deal. To learn more about my friends at Homey, text Homey, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, that's Homey, H-O-M-I-E. Text that to 88588. Alrighty here, let's transition to the game tonight. It was competitive for three quarters, which I think is more than I was expecting, to be honest. Devin Booker missed game after, let's actually start there. 116-88 loss at the hands of the Utah Jazz on the road, a game I wasn't expecting to be too competitive. The Jazz have been on a tear here, just more talented roster, of course, than the Suns. But were you surprised Booker didn't play after what he said Monday? He wouldn't even let us like ask a follow-up question. He was so resounding with his, I'm going to play, I'm good.
Yeah, he pretty much said in the locker room on Monday night, that pretty much that it was just precautionary reasons and it was just them being more precautionary than anything. But I guess it wasn't, because maybe Booker wants to play, but they're kind of holding him out here because maybe it's elevation, maybe just the Utah air there. But lower back, you also have the hamstring as well. I mean, this was from the hamstring, so should point that out. But it's worrisome to me. I think that if Booker doesn't play on Friday, that's when I start to get really worried, because he really wasn't supposed to be on the injury report for tonight's game. So I think just it's more precautionary than anything. I hope that's what it is, Brennan, but what's your read on it?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it's a situation where maybe he hadn't had an opportunity to, you know, be checked out or have a conversation with the medical staff on Monday when he talked to the media and told us just kind of how he was feeling. I'm sure some of it was adrenaline, all those things. And we've talked about it before. It's not a surprise here as we start to get toward the end of the year. There's definitely no need to be aggressive having guys on the court. So, you know, TJ Warren, I think is if this was the middle of a playoff run, maybe he's on the court. D'Anthony Melton, maybe not so much. That one seemed a little more rough, but I think Booker sitting is really just, you know, they're playing the Jazz on the road here. It's like, you know, give him an extra night of rest or push him into a game that is going to be tough on the Suns anyway. I think that's an easy call. So hopefully that's all it is. I agree with you. If it lingers any more, then you start to wonder again if it's another re-aggravation. And he missed, I believe, 9 games the last time that happened. So you don't want that to happen, of course. But I guess the other big story here, Josh Jackson, a third straight game over 20 points, 27, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 5 steals, 9 of 16 from the field, got to the free throw line 10 times. That's 3 straight really strong performances from Jackson.
Yeah, it's really kind of impressive to me. I know the Houston game, he put up 25 points on 23 shots, but the other two games, he's actually been efficient, which is really nice to see. And you think more about it, he's also active on the defensive end. So thinking more about it, he's actually getting in passing lanes more, getting more aggressive with the on-ball defense. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing with Jackson. Maybe it's a growth process, but I don't know how to read Jackson, to be honest. I know this is 3 straight games for him, and I'm one of the more Josh Jackson apologists around the network here, but I feel like I don't know how to read Jackson, because he has these streaks here where he has like 3 or 4 really good games. This is probably his best 3-game stretch of his career, to be honest. But knowing Jackson and how inconsistent he is, Brandon, we could be, once we see Golden State on Friday and the next 3 games after that, he could finish the All-Star break or leading into the All-Star break with 4 or 5 bad games in a row.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I don't think we necessarily know. I mean, I agree with you, just kind of the efficiency and the ability to do it within a more of an offensive system. I'm sure there were stretches of 3 games at the very end of last year where he maybe put up more points or more rebounds, but I think the impact he's had on the game has been pretty strong here too. It's not just, you know, scoring a ton on 25 shot attempts. And so I'm optimistic, but again, I completely agree. We've seen similar flashes here before, even having the efficiency, and it goes away just as soon as it came. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. But what else stood out from you tonight? I think there's a few guys who had strong individual scoring games to kind of keep it close early.
Yeah, for me, if it's not Jackson, I'd probably have to go DeAndre Ayton, who had took surprisingly 19 shots. He took only 5 in the first half of that game, so he got really a lot more aggressive in the second half once the game got out of hand. But 20 points, 9 rebounds for the big fella. And you think more about it, I just want to see more consistency. I know this is kind of the theme here on today's podcast, it seems like, but when you have Ayton go 4 or 5 in the first 7 minutes of that game, and then for the last 15 minutes of game action, he doesn't get really any touches at all. He doesn't take a single shot until the second half starts. What do you think just about that? Because it seems like maybe it's really the point guard situation. Maybe it's Ayton himself. How do you read into that? Because it seems like this is a theme that's been constant all season.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating, of course. I mean, we've talked about it for a while now, but I think the thing that I feel like I've been saying it since some of the very first games of the season in preseason as well, when he was so effective scoring the ball. I remember, you know, a couple games in preseason, he just looked unstoppable. And I was even then kind of worried, like, when he really gets into a groove, the shot he goes back to over and over is that mid-range jumper. And he did it again tonight. Just a lot of, when he has even a few feet of space, he's going to rise and take that shot. And that was part of what worried me about just kind of his profile as a scorer at Arizona, was some of those same just kind of, it's almost laziness to a certain degree, is not being physical, not powering through smaller defenders. He got switched on to Donovan Mitchell at one point tonight. I think it was in the second quarter, if I remember correctly, and passed out of it. Just over and over examples of opportunities where he could get an easy bucket inside and just kind of does other, pretty much whatever it takes to not have to do that. But tonight was his second most field goal attempts of his career. So, you know, I guess nice to see him get those up, even if he didn't power through guys as much as you maybe hope.
Yeah, I think he kind of settled a lot in the mid-range, really, especially in the second half of that game. A lot of times he matched up against Gobert. He's quicker than Gobert. I think he could put the ball on the floor and take a dribble or two, get by him, but he really settles a lot for the jumpers, and it's just going to be a part of Ayton's game. He loves the jumper, and I'm not too mad about it. I mean, he has a sweet stroke, so keep shooting it, and I think it's going to work out well eventually in the end for DeAndre Ayton. But one more guy I wanted to hit on as far as the positive spectrum goes, Brandon, was Kelly Oubre Jr. Even though the plus-minus won't say so, he was the team-leading worst, minus 31 on the night. But 16 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal and a block again for Oubre on 5 of 10 field goal attempts. One, before we even get into Oubre, why did Igor start Dragan Bender and then only play him 14 minutes and Oubre played the rest of the game, it seemed like?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really weird one. I guess just trying to match Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert inside, and you know, Oubre hasn't started a game for the Suns. I think they really want him to be that bench energy guy, but it doesn't make a whole ton of sense, especially just considering that the Suns have been fine in a lot of other matchups going small. Part of it is there's not a lot of options once you get down to, okay, if you don't want Oubre to start, then maybe there's just not much you could have done. I don't know why that has to be that way, especially on a night when Booker, Warren, and Melton are all out. I think you can be a little bit desperate and move off of your principles a little bit there. But yeah, just a weird night. And I think Bender, you know, you see it in his stat line. It's the easy, you could have predicted it right away. If he's not going to be able to be in the game long enough to get into rhythm, he's not going to be effective. And he wasn't. One shot attempt, really nothing else, fouled 3 times. So not much there. But Oubre, I think that would be the other guy I would hit too. Just if we were doing our normal free throws and stuff, it would definitely be Oubre, because he was finishing through Rudy Gobert's contact rim protection. That guy's a fearsome defensive player, and Oubre was just ramming right into him, finishing through him, and 16 points on 10 shots, got to the line 7 times. I think not a lot of guys can do that against Rudy Gobert. And I think you're seeing kind of the experience and presence of Oubre, even against good defenses, which is nice to see.
I know Oubre, as far as passing goes, has some tunnel vision, but as far as being a cutter, Brendan, do you think he's the best cutter on the team? I know Josh Jackson's pretty good as well, but
Bridges.
Oh, Bridges. Yeah, that's a really good plan.
Yeah. All three of those guys are good. And I think that's going to be another strength of this team when, if they do keep Oubre and, you know, they start to get some more playmaking in here as Okobo and Melton develop. We'll see Johnson, I guess, here now, and maybe another guy if they finally get a more traditional point guard. And we'll start to see not only Ayton getting more looks, but I think the cutting and off-ball movement of a lot of the different wings will be really exciting. I mean, that was probably the most exciting, some of the more exciting plays Bridges made in his college career were dunks off of cuts with Jalen Brunson kind of running things. So all three of those guys played well. Bridges played 40 minutes tonight. We should also mention that with so many guys injured. So he's continuing to be a little more aggressive, took 7 shots. But before we go on here, I think maybe we can talk a little bit about what to expect from tomorrow and what kind of happened today across the league and how it might impact the Suns. I want to tell you guys really quickly that you can access our show on your smart speaker, whether that's an Amazon Echo or a Google Home. Definitely tell that speaker to play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. Super easy. It'll queue up the last episode, start playing it. It's that simple. Just say play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns, and you'll get to hear this show as you're doing whatever you need to do around the house. Alrighty. What was the most surprising thing to you today? There were a ton of different deals. It feels like everybody's on a new team, not just the out of nowhere Tyler Johnson trade here with Suns, but a lot of unexpected deals going down, starting in the wee hours of the morning with Tobias Harris heading to the Sixers.
Yeah, Tobias was the big one, I think, in the last 24 hours. But what I wanted to hit on as far as the main thing for me was what's going on in Washington. It seems like there's no direction going on there. They traded Otto Porter for Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis. They're obviously just trying to get off his salary and open up some room there. But they also just traded Markieff Morris to New Orleans for Wesley Johnson in a second round, or they attached a second round pick with Markieff Morris just to get Wesley Johnson. So, and also Shams just tweeted that the Wizards have no plans to move all-star Bradley Beal before the deadline. So if you're in Bradley Beal's position, you're trading away all your good players and you're not going to trade me. What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, if you're in his shoes, I think you definitely get a little bit frustrated. Not that Markieff Morris has been injured. Suns fans will know that he's not necessarily a pleasant person. So I don't know if that one is necessarily so painful in the moment, but Otto Porter definitely is. I don't think either of the guys they got back are going to replicate what he's been doing, even if he's been a little bit down this year. I think the thing there to think about is pulling it into the Suns a little bit here, but besides the Markieff Morris connection, which has been so long now, there really isn't a connection there, is what I just was saying about the Heat. So the Wizards got under the luxury tax by doing those two moves. They didn't maybe get back as much as you would have hoped, especially for Porter. That's a young player on a you hope could get better. I think they maybe could have done better than Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker. But regardless, you see they had to attach a second round pick to Markieff Morris to get the Pelicans to take him back. The Suns didn't do that. The Suns did not get that second round pick. It feels like nitpicking, I'm sure, to the listeners here, but those things matter. I mean, that's why that good franchise gets stockpiles of assets to use. You know, talk about Johnson potentially being part of a star deal, a second here, a first there, a young player that's interesting just as the cost of doing business. That's how you turn a roster around. And it is just frustrating. It's like something as silly as Markieff Morris, even that can get a second round pick attached to it. And the Heat were able to do it with just James Jones kind of being a kind general manager doing a favor to another franchise.
Yeah, for me, those moves don't really make much sense to me. But other moves that I think are kind of interesting are around the league. We should just pivot back to Tobias Harris for a second here, because I think that's the biggest domino to fall from the last 24 hours, and really probably will be the rest of the trade deadline unless Anthony Davis gets traded to LA or somewhere else in the meantime. But Tobias Harris, you add him in alongside Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Brendan. I think they have, on talent alone and starting lineup alone, I think they have the best starting lineup in the Eastern Conference. I think they're right alongside Toronto now. I think they're better than Boston now. How do you rate Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference? Because for them, I mean, they're reportedly trying to sign Tobias and Jimmy Butler for the long term. So they're going to be paying 4 guys near really completely into the luxury tax. So you're really going to be surrounding those 4 guys with either draft picks or just minimum salaries for the next 3 or 4 years so they all stay around.
Yeah, really expensive. Going to be a really expensive team. Going to be a really high wire act for the coach there, Brett Brown. It'll be tough to make it work because these are all guys. They were already having blow-ups internally, it felt like, as was reported, between Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, all three guys who like to have the ball in their hands, are most effective with their ball in their hands. Now they just had another one, another guy whose main value this, not main value, but a big part of his value this season has been the ability to kind of take on more of a playmaking role, take a bunch of off the bounce threes, make a ton of those, move the ball a little bit, initiate the Clippers offense as a wing. That's not going to be what he does here in Philly. He's going to be the fourth option. He's going to be a spot up guy, get out in transition, play more defense, switch. It's going to be interesting to see how they make it work, but I think I would have them. I mean, of course, on talent alone, you have them right near the top now. If they weren't already, it probably catapults them past, I don't know. That's tough. I think they have more talent than the Bucks, but the Bucks have been so good. And then the Celtics are so inconsistent. I mean, it's wide open, and the Sixers definitely made a run here to get it done. And that Miami Heat 2021 first rounder has gotten another life here as the Clippers now their best asset, and as they kind of dream big across the next couple seasons. But that pick is just as funny to watch as that Lakers pick used to be.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, really. It's three or four franchises now been changed by that single pick. But one more, I think, quote unquote, big move that we should hit on is it happened like during the Suns game, actually. And while Harrison Barnes is actually on the floor for the Dallas Mavericks, which is kind of embarrassing to think about, but Harrison Barnes got traded to the Sacramento Kings today, really just in a salary dump from the Dallas Mavericks. And this is really indicating to me that Sacramento is going for this year. They're right outside the 8 seed, but right now they're losing by almost 40 points to the Houston Rockets at home against Sacramento. So I don't know how this team's going to respond for that. But after getting Harrison Barnes on the really in the table now, you add him in the Buddy Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, De'Aaron Fox. You have so much young talent there. And if you re-sign Barnes to the long term, not only short term, but I feel like this team now has an identity.
Yeah, I like it. I think they needed everyone. All the reporters you heard talk about the Kings were pretty open about the fact that they were looking for a big wing and a forward who could go between positions, with Bogdanovic being a little bit more of a two, if you really want to get technical about it. And so the fit made a ton of sense. There were a lot of people using Barnes specifically as an example. So it felt kind of pretty inevitable almost with how many people were mentioning it. But if you do want to, again, I mean, it's not all these things are related to the Suns, but we can't help but think about it in those terms sometimes. And that's another contender, you know, a young, good team in the West, in the Suns division, that they have to play even more often, that is kind of stockpiling for the future and making a go at it. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits. He's still a good player, even though he's getting up there in age, and makes him a little bit better. So that was a big one. I agree. It's going to be fascinating to see kind of what the Kings do here, because they're not going to get free agents, but they also don't have like a surefire superstar draft pick to build around. So they're going to need to get creative.
Yeah, adding in Harrison Barnes to that young core, and also in the past week, adding Kristaps Porzingis into the Dallas's core. Those two teams who are right near Phoenix last year, they're really making a run for it to improve. But one more thing I want to hit on as far as trades go for today's podcast, Brian, is the Anthony Davis saga. It's taking over all the headlines right now. And really the latest breadcrumbs we're hearing about this is that the Pelicans pretty much played the Lakers in the entire process, according to Brian Windhorst. And Rich Nichols just suggested, but Brian Windhorst kind of confirmed on the jump, that the Pelicans were kind of leaking all these offers out on purpose to really fracture the Lakers locker room in hopes of really kind of screwing over the Lakers for trying to force Anthony Davis there in the first place. So what's your reaction to that? And do you even think Anthony Davis gets traded by LeBron now?
It seems like it won't happen. I mean, Brian Windhorst is I think he's one of the best reporters out there. And when he feels certain about something, that's usually a pretty good indicator that it's real. I mean, he was the guy that obviously has connections with LeBron, especially too. So this situation, you feel like he might even have more intel, kind of what's going on here. And I think it's honestly, like, I have a lot of respect for Dell Demps. You know, he's not a guy who gets praised by any means. They've screwed up their fair share of decisions between when they drafted AD and where we are now, and they're about to lose him for that exact reason. Regardless of when it happens, he's clearly not going to stick around. And the fact that he's kind of going out on a limb and saying, I'm going to fight this battle for all the teams that are tired of Rich Paul and LeBron James trying to run the entire league and do whatever they want and use the media at their will to just bend and break. I think it is brave. It does earn him some respect in my book. As for the kind of falling out here, the Lakers seem, people should go look up on Twitter, Worldwide Wob and a bunch of other people. Did you see that? James sitting like four seats away from everyone else on the Lakers.
Yeah, that's really, yeah.
that's going to be really rough. And it's not even a secret. I mean, it's open. The whole internet's been full of Brandon Ingram's not as good as Jason Tatum and Lonzo Ball doesn't want to play for the Pelicans. And is Kyle Kuzma worth giving up and blah, blah, blah. And now here, they're all going to have to make good and play with each other for 25 games and then potentially a playoff run. So that's going to get ugly. And the Pelicans are smart. I mean, I think we've known that the Lakers offer wasn't so far and away the best one that it should have gotten done now. It just felt like maybe Rich Paul was going to win. And I think he's lost this battle.
I think it's an interesting question to end today's podcast on, because this just popped in my head, but thinking more about it from the LeBron James point of view, we've heard from multiple outlets over the past year or so that LeBron isn't an attractive guy if you're another superstar to play with. This Anthony Davis is kind of the first guy that's kind of wanting to openly play with LeBron James in a while. So thinking of it from the young teammate point of view, though, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, all these guys, and you think from the outside looking at, if you're a prospective guy that maybe wants to join the Lakers, do you want to be involved in this saga? Because every year that LeBron James is on a team, this stuff's going to happen. I mean, if you think about from the young guy's point of view again, like Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, you're not really going to look at LeBron the same way anymore, I don't think, because he's trying to trade you.
Yeah, if you're a young player, I think it's a nightmare. I mean, we've seen that play out time and time again. You know, think about all the random bit players who have turned into pretty solid role players elsewhere that honestly would look nice next to LeBron now that he just SU'd because he didn't feel like they were ready. Maybe they weren't, maybe they were, maybe he needed to be more patient, whatever it is. But, you know, Joe Harris played with LeBron in his first year back in Cleveland. That's a nice player. That would be an awesome player to have next to LeBron now. Obviously not in Cleveland anymore, of course. But like, you just think about all the different guys and what he missed out on because he was so impatient. And maybe it's worth it. He's won three titles and I'm sure he wouldn't give any of those back, but it's definitely ruining this Lakers experiment, at least year one of it, as he gets into his mid-30s here. So as we maybe talk about the Kings and the Mavs trending upward, I think the Lakers were expecting to be trending a whole lot more upward by this time this season as a competitor in the West than they have. So that's probably obviously the biggest thing to watch here with the Western Conference and how it shakes out even tomorrow and into the future.
Yeah, but it's kind of funny here. I'm just reading this on Twitter. I just saw this come across my page. It's kind of ironic that we're talking about right now because LeBron James posted a thing on Instagram about Harrison Barnes being traded in the middle of a game saying this isn't right. So it's kind of ironic that he's freaking out about Harrison Barnes being traded while he's trying to trade the rest of his teammates.
Yeah, I just saw that too. That's he's on one recently. I don't know what's going on with LeBron. I think he's in a little bit of shock because his grand plan didn't work.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun though to watch what happens not only tomorrow but the rest of the season. I mean, we could be in the midst of seeing the Lakers crumble apart here the last 20 games of the season, but we are now less than about 15 hours away from the trade deadline tomorrow. We'll be joining you guys soon thereafter the 1 o'clock Arizona time deadline passes. So until then, guys, enjoy the festivities for the trade deadline and enjoy the action. We'll talk to